Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. The podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies and is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Justin Hakes. Today, we're uncovering January reinsurance renewals. Aon joins us to discuss the 2024 outlook and breaks down the stark difference in market dynamics from last year's grueling cycle. Plus, a hearing to reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program, the latest push for a long-term solution. But first, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is stopping by Capitol Hill this week, where she'll appear before the House Financial Services and Senate Banking Committees. Several Treasury Department developments over recent years impact the property casualty insurance industry, including multiple efforts by the Federal Insurance Office, most prominently, its imminent climate data collection. Democratic Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez asked Yellen about the data call during the House Financial Services hearing.
And how is FIO working to ensure that it is not duplicating efforts already conducted by the NAIC or state regulators?
So there is a collaboration. The focus is and need for data is slightly different for NAC and FIO, but I think there's a good chance that they will be able to collaborate and go out with a single collection in order to collaborate and reduce burdens on insurance companies.
NAMIC previously issued comments to the Office of Management and Budget outlining the flaws with FIO's massive proposed climate data call, including its lack of compliance with statutory requirements before the office can issue subpoenas. Also on Capitol Hill, a push to reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program. The Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs held a hearing to understand local perspectives on challenges and solutions. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle and witnesses support a long-term reauthorization and improvements to the program. Congress has extended the NFIP 28 times since September 2017. Daniel Kanuski, a former acting deputy director of FEMA who is currently managing director for Marsh McLellan, says communities often fail to protect themselves from the physical and financial impacts of flooding.
Federal policies and programs, including the NFIP, are essential, but ultimately all disasters are local, and so too are resilience investment decisions.
Property casualty insurers have a long history of supporting strong building codes and mitigation funding and understand the importance of the program's reauthorization to protect Americans from catastrophic flood risk. NAMIC submitted testimony for the hearing that focused on the property casualty insurance industry's unique role in managing climate and flood risks and offered suggestions to improve the program. As record sea surface temperatures become the norm, some scientists suggest adding a Category 6 for hurricanes. A new study in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences notes Category 5 has no upper bound, despite the fact that the damage potential from such a storm's maximum sustained winds increases exponentially. The study defines a hypothetical Category 6 for hurricanes with maximum sustained winds of greater than 192 miles per hour. It shows a number of recent tropical cyclones would meet that threshold. While the study does not represent an official move by the National Hurricane Center to add another hurricane category, authors hope it would raise awareness about the perils of increased risk of major tropical cyclones due to global warming. It also notes there are many shortcomings of the Saffir-Simpson scale, chief among them that it only focuses on wind when most hurricane-related fatalities are caused by water. The January property reinsurance renewal has set the stage for an interesting year ahead. On today's Unscripted, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldrich talks with Aon's Brad Melvin and Pat Abbey about the shifting dynamics and what we can expect in 2024.
We can't escape the topic of reinsurance. As try as I might, it seems to dominate about every conversation I'm in these days. And again, on the podcast today, we have two guests from the reinsurance industry who are going to talk through the January renewals, a new report that's out. And so joining me today is podcast veteran Pat Abbey from Aon, and also Brad Melvin is also joining us today. So we have two of Aon's finest to talk about the recent renewals, what we see in the reinsurance marketplace going forward, how things are going. So Pat and Brad, thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having
us. Our pleasure. Yeah, thank you. Our pleasure.
So, Pat, we'll start with you. Aon just released a new report called the Reinsurance Market Dynamics Report. It used words like stable and orderly and calmer compared to, I think, the 23 renewals or the 22 renewals, however you want to characterize that, last year's renewals. Certainly different. You know, we hear from primary member companies, obviously, a lot about the reinsurance marketplace. So tell us about the report, what some of the findings are. I didn't see the word cheaper in there in terms of describing the reinsurance renewals. So let's just talk through what we're seeing here in the marketplace.
Absolutely, Neil. That's a very fair question. And the adjectives you use to intro this discussion topic certainly were summarized in our report, and a good real summary of what happened in January 1, 2024. And as you kind of alluded, these descriptors are considerably different than a year ago. And the fundamentals driving that shift over the past 12 months were really centered around a year ago. There was a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the market around if and how much the reinsurance market would harden. Mm-hmm. And that question mark meant that capital providers, reinsurer executives, and reinsurance underwriters, for that matter, had less comfort in the overall direction of the market. So, you know, in addition to that kind of big question mark that loomed over the market last year, many of the supporters of mutual insurers purchased significant retro programs. So their reinsurers purchased significant retro programs, and that market had a lot less clarity through November and December of last year. You know, also kind of fueled by really a difficult time for Hurricane Ian to make landfall late in the fall. So you've got that uncertainty in the retro market, increasing inflation pressures, economic and social pressures, and then that challenging cat experience from events like Hurricane Ian. All of those created this uncertainty, then clashed with a deteriorating investment market. And all of this led to just a real lack of comfort from reinsurers last year that really led to a really challenging renewal at 1-1-2023. So if we, you know, kind of put that in the rearview mirror and you look to now 1-1-2024, which we want to talk about more here today, reinsurers and their capital providers had experienced the shift in the market. That big question mark we had a year ago was answered, and that was no longer a debate. And what that meant were reinsurers have been on track for a very profitable year for 2023. I think we're going to see that once final results are published. Supply of reinsurance is up. I think through quarter three, our estimates are about a $45 billion increase in overall capital for the reinsurance market. And then the retro market was far more stable this year. And a lot of that was driven by record levels of cat bond issuance in 2023. Okay. So all of those various individual factors that created a challenge last year were more aligned and more clear. So as you said, we wouldn't necessarily call this a soft market. We wouldn't call it a cheap market or an easy one. Right. None of those adjectives made our report. Yeah. But certainly the predictability was there. And you know, last thing we would just want to caveat and add, though, is that still some very challenging results for many insurers and reinsurers around the country. We're going to talk a little bit more about that today, I think, around weather and other various trends. It's, you know, these are macro observations that we're talking about here, as opposed to the observations of each and every insurer around the country.
Yeah, indeed. And we can talk about one of those. Let's keep with you, Pat, and spend a minute here on catastrophe losses. I know that seems to drive a lot, or it was talked about a lot as one of the main drivers, as you mentioned previously, to last year's renewal period. Wasn't an uneventful year on the cat side, perhaps a little more, again, calm, orderly. I think we still had $100 billion in cat losses. We hear a lot about kittens these days too, right? The smaller losses that don't quite get to the cat program. That some of our members are wrestling with. But what are we seeing specifically on the cat front?
Sure. This is another great question, Neil. 2023 was a record year for the U.S. in terms of natural catastrophes, specifically for severe convective storm, and those events impacting large sections of the Midwest, what many would call the Eastern Midwest, amongst other areas. And certainly the U.S. insurance industry as a whole has been navigating this extended period of heightened loss trend due to the impacts of things like inflation, in addition to that rather record weather activity, both kind of creating a pretty significant headwind for the market. The frequency of that weather hit insurers while they were navigating significant rate improvements, exposure management, policy term changes across their portfolio, a lot of that being driven by January 1, 2023 reinsurance renewal conditions. So not only was this kind of a record weather year in 2023, the timing of that weather was not ideal for the industry. Mm-hmm. And again, now once I think direct and net results are published for the insurer segment for 2023, you're going to see some pretty challenged numbers for the market. And again, that was the confluence of challenging weather at a very challenging time for the market. We'd also add that you can throw in a Hawaii wildfire, you can throw in a California tropical cyclone to the mix, as well as a pretty significant Florida hurricane that thankfully dodged some pretty significant populations and insured exposure from a scenario standpoint, but three pretty significant events for the industry outside of that severe convective storm activity.
Yeah, indeed. And maybe 24 will be more calm as we go forward, but you know, it's hard to know here in January. It's been cold already here as we have this conversation today, but maybe it will be a little more calm. So, Brad, let's go to you. Namik, we've tried in the last 6 months or so to talk about the things that Pat mentioned, overall weather patterns, climate change, whatever we want to call it, litigation environment, inflationary pressures. We've added reinsurance capacity issues to challenges to that list. And we kind of talk about this under this moniker of a new era of risk for that primary insurers are facing. So, and we talk a lot about things we're trying to do on the advocacy front to try to address it. Some things we can help on and other things are certainly harder. But what do you see in terms of the reinsurance market and reinsurers particularly? They're also impacted by this uncertainty, you know, that we see in all these areas. How do you think, you know, the reinsurers are dealing with it beyond the sort of traditional terms and conditions discussion with primary insurers? What's on their minds? What are you guys hearing?
Yeah, so why don't we start with the climate change or, you know, the perceived weather volatility first? It's for surely a discussion with all reinsurers. And as you might understand, it's a broad topic and there's a lot of people that have, you know, varying views on the topic. But, you know, fundamentally, it comes down to a couple of things is capital and also view of risk is kind of what the biggest impact, you know, we're seeing. And so you think about the reinsurers, capital providers, the investors, you know, over the last 5 years leading up to 2022, they weren't able to meet their cost of capital, had very challenging results, and therefore capital wasn't flowing in. And because there wasn't profit to kind of support, you know, the more volatile years that these companies were having. So a lot of these reinsurers, almost all of the major reinsurers are publicly traded and they're subject to, you know, investor interest and flow and scrutiny around ESG and how climate change is managed. So just how they manage climate change affected, you know, how they thought about capacity and where they deploy their capital. And then that's also led to, you know, I think now more than ever, reinsurers are developing their own view of risk, or they have already developed their own view of risk. And that's reflecting that changing weather volatility. You know, in a lot of ways, it's probably healthy for the industry because it makes a market and not everyone has the same view. But it also means that our role as a reinsurance broker and advocate has grown in complexity as we try to source that capital and then differentiate each of our clients. So that's the climate change element and how we think reinsurers are viewing it. On the inflation, you know, it's another major factor, as everyone knows from, you know, the last 18 months. It's particularly acute for excess of loss reinsurers who have more of a leveraged impact of that claims and exposure inflation. So in addition to trying to understand the impact of that inflation is having on claims, they're also trying to understand how each individual client has actually addressed it in their books, right? How have they done insurance to value? How have they grossed up their exposures that they actually presented to the reinsurers? And are they, and that does vary across almost every cedent, right? So there's a lot of time and effort that they're focused on understanding that. You know, and then lastly, it, you know, inflation has increased demand for reinsurance. Last 1/1, it was so expensive and there wasn't enough capacity that the demand didn't arrive as people thought it would arrive. But as the year progressed, people were topping off the program, and definitely there was an opportunity this 1/1 to buy more top limit where it was a little bit more competitive. So, you know, that's the inflation element. And then on the legal system abuse, you know, really a focus at the casualty reinsurers. You know, the nuclear verdicts, you know, have been an industry topic for many years. Yeah. The legal system abuse really has the potential impact. You know, these individual verdicts can really destroy, an accident year pretty quickly. And reinsurers are exposed to that, especially on an excessive loss basis. So, you know, they're really spending a lot of time, you know, looking at reinsurers for their limits deployed, what their strategies are to actually, you know, mitigate the legal system abuse, geographic hotspots in their books. And all those things are kind of coming to how they're managing their casualty reinsurance portfolios. You know, everyone was expecting the casualty to be the hard market at 1/1 like property was a year ago. Mm-hmm. It did not materialize because there was not a capacity crunch. But if these trends do continue, and we are seeing real reserve development, if these trends continue, it's going to put more pressure on the casualty market. But that's how we would see the reinsurers feeling the impact of those three topics. Yeah.
That's interesting. I heard the same about, I was going to ask you specifically about the casualty lines, because I had heard that was what people had anticipated, but I hadn't really heard much of an outcome yet about whether we saw what kind of reaction we ended up seeing there. It's interesting. So, Pat, let's talk a little bit about the primary company side here. Obviously, you know, Aon is a great partner of NAMIC. We produce the mutual factor every year together and look forward to doing that again this year. It focuses on the performance of the mutual industry. Anything here specific to the mutual insurers? Certainly they had their struggles in this past year, largely given the line of business focus and geographic focus of the mutual industry is probably to be expected. What are you seeing here now for 24?
Sure. It's an interesting question, Neil, because at a high level, you know, we feel like there's pretty significant alignment across the industry vertical in terms of their views on these challenges. So if I follow Brad's lead a little bit on the various topics he hit on, if we think about climate change for the mutual segment, both, you know, large and small carriers are all asking the question, how can we continue to make sure that we are pricing for risk, transferring risk and managing portfolios in a way that allows us to maintain the long-term stability that the mutual insurance segment is known for. And in many ways, the smaller insurer is a bit more susceptible given the general observation of them having smaller footprints, mm-hmm. perhaps a narrower source of distribution, in some cases, less financial resources needed to measure and navigate the challenge. You know, but that being said, speaking out of the other side of my mouth, a lot of smaller insurers do have the advantage when it comes to being nimble, quick decision making, and having the ability to manage their portfolios more quickly. And I know you're hearing about this just from our various conversations, Neil. I mean, we're seeing more change in local insurance markets from mutual insurers than really ever before. And, you know, in a way, this can carry some negative connotations, but, you know, we're really seeing this as much as an opportunity as it is a threat to the mutual insurance segment in terms of where we go going forward. If we flip to the inflation topic, you know, certainly inflation has tempered, mm-hmm. and you pick up the newspaper and you constantly read about it tempering. But the reality of it is inflation is still positive. So insurers are still growing premium and exposure effectively without writing a new policy. So, you know, it's still there. It's still going to be a topic for a while. Yeah. And I think the biggest takeaway for, you know, the mutual insurer segment is inflation isn't really a new phenomenon for the insurance industry, but we think the past few years have really pushed insurers to revisit their data sources and their approach to projecting inflation's impact on both exposure and loss trend. And it's been a real learning opportunity for the entire industry vertical, from, you know, consumer to production source to insurer, all the way up to the reinsurers. And then, you know, lastly, I'll comment a little bit on the legal system abuse. We've shared in other conversations and I think other podcasts, you know, there's never been a more important and vital time for the claims operations of insurers to be delivering differentiated outcomes. And, you know, ultimately carriers that have that experienced, adept, well-organized claims operation are finding opportunities to deliver differentiated results. A lot of that is coming out of the claims operations closely interacting with other parts of insurance company operations. So underwriting, actuarial, product management, and the most well-run companies are creating operations where the observations of their claims team and the learnings of their claims team are quickly being pushed through other key parts of their organization when it comes to decision making and strategy.
Yeah, I hear a lot about that. I was talking yesterday with a member company about some of their lessons learned actually on the claim side, and it's people are certainly paying attention, no doubt about it. And also, you know, I think it does seem to indicate in the macro level that inflation is moderating. Doesn't certainly mean prices are decreasing of things. The increase in whatever it may be, the new auto part or whatever, is kind of baked in. I saw an interesting statistic the other day. Just 3 years ago, there were 12 models of car that sold for $100,000 or more. This year, there's 36 models of cars that sell for $100,000 or more. And those cars crash into each other, right? And they have expensive claims, and that's like two houses crashing into each other, right? And they have to put them back together again. And it just kind of puts into perspective some of the struggles that the industry. I don't really care how aggressive insurers have been on their auto rates. They're probably still not where they ought to be as it relates to the real price of things that have to be repaired and the longer term effect that the inflation has had on the broader economy here. It's sort of staggering to think about that. So Brad, that gets me to one point in the report. You talk a little bit about, you know, obviously insurers try to seek profitability. The report, I think, probably rightly indicates that several struggled with that last year. So what are we seeing there? How, if you were, you know, how can you coach insurers on this question, either as it relates to how reinsurers view this or just generally what you're seeing here on this question?
Yeah, another great question. So, you know, I think practically for years, you know, a relatively stable reinsurance market meant that, you know, navigating that market was pretty well handled just by proper rate making and high level exposure management. But coming out of the 1/1/23 renewals, which did drive those higher retentions for most mutuals, it was apparent that many companies needed to expand their efforts to navigate that impact. So leading up to following 1/1/23, our work with insurers has been focused on expanding, you know, a set of core functional areas, things, you know, like evaluating current and projected capital adequacy. And there is, you know, when you take those higher retentions, much more susceptible to multiple losses within mm-hmm. that retention. And mm-hmm. you really have to have a sharper focus on capital, you know, understanding those rating implications related to that, of course. We're spending a huge amount of time on portfolio optimization and concentration management and, you know, reporting of values and ITV, of course. And, you know, and then some of the core operations around rate making and underwriting due diligence. It's kind of a back to basics kind of approach to things. And not that people were, you know, asleep. It's just there's so much pressure on all these different levers that are being pulled that you have to take a look at everything. Yeah. You know, and then I think another element is just new solutions. You know, you have to look at, you know, if you're going to increase your property per risk retention by, you know, 100,000, and, you know, what does that mean for, you know, your capital position? Do you look at private debt? which has become a very active market for mutuals. If you look at legacy covers and free up capital and take out some reserve volatility. So we're spending a lot more time on those conversations. Facultative reinsurance has become very, very popular again to reduce the retentions. It's a little bit more work, obviously, for companies when it's not a treaty, but you know, facultative has become a real important tool as well. You know, and I think one other consideration is, you know, coming out of 1/1/23, a lot of clients were saying to us, well, do relationships with reinsurers really matter? And they actually do. It didn't feel like it, but there's direct correlation between the investment that our clients are making in those relationships and capacity and negotiation and movement in terms. So that started to improve at 1/1/24. And I think that, you know, the market continuing to be healthy is going to just help that quite a bit.
Yeah, agreed. So Brad, we'll stay with you as we close out here. Hopefully we're entering, maybe we've been through the worst of this. Obviously the uncertainty that we face, and you know, we hope that the economy and inflation is going the right direction. We hope the weather maybe is going to improve. We at NAMIC have, you know, some ability to influence litigation environment, and we're working night and day to make changes in the states to try to help that. But how would you, you know, what do you see going forward for insurers as we navigate this new era, and what opportunities are there? There's opportunity to grow here, but what else do you see here?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I remember seeing you at PAMIC last year, and you talked about the headwinds, and you're like, yeah, well, I just feel like I'm going from convention to convention and talking about all the headwinds.
That's what I did.
Exactly. Well, you know, now it's nice to start talking about some of the opportunities, and we're actually pretty excited about the conversations we're having. You know, they have, of course, continue to tackle those challenges, and there's a period of time where rates are being earned through the book, and underwriting actions are taking their impact. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we are spending a lot of time trying to, you know, come up with solutions and working with our clients for future profitable growth. So many of them are looking ahead and evaluating their geographic footprint and thinking about potential expansion. Consolidation is definitely an opportunity for some. It's going to be a threat for others, but definitely an opportunity.
Yeah.
Many insurers are exploring a specialty strategy. You know, if they don't have one, or if they have a specialty strategy, they're thinking about how can I expand that? Still within, you know, serving their mutual company clients. And, you know, they're also managing IT investments, which is really, really challenging. But the impact of AI is on the minds of most leaders. We're having a lot of conversations around the impact of AI. Talent, you know, again, is an opportunity, but I get a sense that there's a lot more stability on the talent front. If I asked, you know, top five risk right now of insurers, talent would have been on it the last, call it 48 months. It's probably not there. There's a lot more stability in that area.
Yeah. I agree there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, then I guess, you know, tactically, you know, with reinsurance capital rebounding, you know, after a pretty profitable year, you know, I think there's going to be some opportunity for off-cycle purchases. We are seeing clients either topping off their programs, maybe buying down if there's some excess capacity. So there is that opportunity. You know, I think the rate is coming through, and I think the biggest obstacle is regulators and the ability to kind of earn it. But I think as the year continues and their profitability improves and the reinsurance market continues to hopefully improve, 1/1/25 might look very different than 1/1/24. And so we're excited about that as well.
Yeah, that's good. Well, there'll be nobody more excited than me, and maybe not have to talk about this is with as much frequency in terms of what's going on in the marketplace and the impact it has on members. It's 2023 will certainly go down as a pivotal year in the insurance industry, not just in terms of the financial performance of the industry, but just I think the industry changed a lot in that year in ways that will probably be with us for a good while. And you mentioned some of those, whether it be consolidation or just how companies view risk and how they're looking to take on different opportunities. I think it will go back down as a pretty important year in the history of the insurance industry. And certainly at NAMIC and our member companies, that's the case. But listen, both of you, Pat, Brad, thank you for joining me today. Thanks to Aon for the great partnership with NAMIC. I always talk through that you guys are one of our real partners as we look and how we can serve the membership here together. And we thank you for that. You've been great partners for our membership and for NAMIC itself. So we look forward to continuing that this year. We'll produce the mutual factor again. We'll have another session at convention and do another podcast on it, Pat, and talk about the performance of the mutual industry a little later in the year. Hopefully it's better than we have seen before or the last couple of years. And thank you guys both the partnership and joining me here today.
And that's all for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back on February 21st when Florida Insurance Commissioner Mike Yaworsky joins us. Until next time, I'm Justin Hakes. Have a great day.